Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is half an hour or so of improving your game or improving the games of others. It's all about cricket for a little while. We're going to give you a hand with that. Now, my name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And joining me, as he always does, on the line from Millfield School, it's the Director of Cricket Coaching there. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
I've got a new job title. You just reminded me.
Oh, okay.
How about that? What we've done is we've dropped the coaching off the end. How about that? Just Director of Cricket. Yeah. They say it's less typing at the end of your emails, isn't it? So it's a good thing that... it's a bit more concise, a bit more to the point, and a couple of more responsibilities, but I quite like it. Takes me back a few years.
Yeah, so you'll soon be able to afford a similar kind of house to the size that Sam Lavery's got then.
No, mate. I don't think it's come with any increase in wage. I think it's just more responsibility and a shorter job title. I think that's how that one's worked.
Okay. Sam Lavery not here.
He's lost in his mansion. He's trying to find a Wi-Fi signal along one of the massive corridors that he has.
He's rattling around in there. He might try and join us later in the show, so stay tuned to see if he pops up or not. But we'll crash on relentlessly without him. And I wanted to talk a bit about Facebook today. Well, not Facebook specifically, but something that has sort of been highlighted by the way people do things on Facebook, and that is technique. Of course, we post every day a video of somebody somewhere in the world using a pitch vision system. They might be batting, they might be bowling, but they're getting on with improving their game in the nets. And inevitably, there will be the comments that come up to criticise that person's technique. Very, very rarely do I ever see a positive comment. And very, very rarely do I see even a constructive criticism. A lot of the time it's pointing out something, whether real or imagined. And a lot of the time it's telling someone that they're just not very good. I guess part of that is, you know, the nature of the internet, in that you are in your own little bubble there. You're looking at the Facebook on your phone. You see some random person pop up and you spot something that's imperfect about it, and you just have to tell them. And who cares, because you don't know who that person is. So there's that anonymous element in there. But I think it does say a lot about how a lot of people approach cricket technique. They think about their own technique, they look at the technique of others, and they look at it as imperfect, needing correcting, and the way you do that is by highlighting that negative point. So I wanted to ask you, Gareth, about the way you go about correcting technique and the way that you approach it from a non-Facebook way, from a way that you are in front of a player, whether it's a batter or a bowler, and you feel like there is some kind of a technical correction you could make, and how you approach that. Big topic, I know, but what do you think? First of all, what do you think of Facebook? And then second of all, how do you go about making technical corrections in that in an effective way?
Well, let's go with the Facebook one first. I mean, Facebook's brilliant, isn't it? And all of the mediums to get stuff out there. And I think as long as you take Facebook and Twitter for what they are, which is an opportunity to say stuff or to show stuff, I think it's obviously going to have comments, isn't it? Comment that will come back. And, I think probably the best way to do it is, if when you stick something out there, you're going to have to accept that some people are going to like it. Most people that write stuff generally don't like it, because they're motivated to write something. Whereas normally when we like something, we might not be motivated to say a positive, but people are more motivated to say a negative. And that's something I found out. I can remember donkeys years ago when I was coaching Somerset, obviously a really passionate cricket club with a huge membership, and there was this sort of fans forum, I suppose, and all the players got really uptight when the fans were criticising them. But the bottom line is that you're there to be commented on, and generally when people want to make a comment, it's normally a negative one. You know, my mum used to get really uptight about all the things people used to write about me and how useless I was and I should be sacked and all of that sort of thing. But the bottom line is, you know, that's what happens on these things. So I like the way that Vaughan goes about it, because Michael Vaughan is quite outspoken when he sticks stuff on Twitter, and he does some quite funky things, and then literally he's almost asking people to have a bit of a dart in back, and then he couldn't give a monkey's about it. He's got quite thick skin. If somebody says this, that and the other, he just gets on with it. And in many ways, you know, when we put stuff up on the Pitch Vision Facebook site showcasing somebody who's done something really well, has shown some development, or has done something funny, which is a bit topical and a bit, you know, we can all have a bit of a giggle at, including the person that actually fell over bowling or fell over batting or whatever the case may be. You know, it's fun, isn't it? And it's stuck up there, and people choose to make a comment on it. And I think what happens is you get people being commentators. That's good. That's bad. You should be doing this, you should be doing that. And the difference between commentary and coaching to me is, yes, we can all identify if somebody's hit one up in the air to cover, or they've fallen over when they're batting. It's, you know, what is the coaching process? And that's the difference to me between commentating and coaching. So how do I go about it? Well, I look at what's in front of me. I make a call, which often isn't just one ball, which is what we see when we put a bit of video up and up on the Facebook page. That's one ball. It's a snapshot. I try to take a more considered view of that, because that one ball may not be reflective of what that person does at that given time, whether they've done it well or whether they've done it badly. So I take a view, often backed up by video from the Pitch Vision system, or backed up by stats from it, or backed up from video from different angles on a video camera, and then I'll look at what's going on, and I'll make a view based on what I see combined with what I know about the person and how they perceive, how they know their game, how they like to be coached. And then I'll properly coach them. And that's very different from looking at a snapshot of a bit of video, seeing something in there, assuming that that's what they do every time that they do that particular action or shot, and then making a comment on it with no actual value associated it and no progress, and how to go about getting it better. So to me, that's the difference between coaching, and that's the difference between commentating, which is what we generally see on sites.
Yeah, coaching is often what you don't say as well, isn't it, as well as what you do say. You know, there are times when you might spot something and you might think to yourself, well, you know, now is not the time, or this is not a particularly important thing. Okay, it doesn't fit the exact model in my mind of what is technical perfection, perhaps, but I know that's okay. You know, we can cope with that. We can manage that, because we need to do other things first, or we're working on something completely different. You know, if you were to suddenly start doing technical coaching in the middle of a session where the focus is on dealing with someone's ability to cope with pressure or to improve somebody's game plan in a certain way, then perhaps that wouldn't be suitable. So, you know, it is about the right, saying the right thing, often not saying the right thing, not saying anything, and often maybe keeping that piece of information in the back of your mind somewhere for another time, but just going at the time, saying nothing. But saying nothing is not a very interesting thing to do on Facebook, is it? So,
no, I mean, and that's not, you're absolutely right. People want to make comment, and that's great. And I've got no problem with people making comment. I think it's brilliant because it shows there's a real interest in there and a real passion behind it, and yeah, it shows that they're looking at the stuff that we're putting out there. So, you know, that's fantastic. The other thing I would say about commentary, and this is where technology is going, and there is technology out there at the moment which allows us to do this, but basically is to strip away the skin and the face and the sponsors' names on the bats and all of that sort of thing, and to basically have a skeleton playing cricket. So if we put on there a skeleton of some of the top players in the world that were unrecognisable because we don't, you know, we wouldn't be looking at their face and all of the things that we recognise them as, you know. So if AB de Villiers is batting, we would recognise it's him from his face or his grill, also his sponsor kit and all of that malarkey. If we actually stripped all of that back and just saw the skeleton, which you can do with a thing called Vicom, which we use in England around some of our bowling mechanics work. It's really expensive, so it's not mainstream by any stretch of your imagination. But also we do a little bit in batting as well. It would be fascinating to see what the comments would be of some of the best players in the world skeletons, even that, so they wouldn't know they were the best players in the world. And I'm sure that people would be able to pick comment and would put some negatives in that, because the bottom line is that performance is rarely perfect, particularly if we've got this perfect model of what performance is in our brain, which most people have. You know, so a on drive by Virat Kohli, if it was just his skeleton and you didn't know it was Virat Kohli, would get some serious criticism. Okay, and then all of a sudden you put the skin back on top of him and people would come back and go, oh, but it's Virat Kohli. And that's, of course, what the guys on the videos that don't have, because they haven't built up this huge volume of performance, which then impacts upon the way that we perceive them and view them, you know. So if I'm somebody in India watching somebody in Scotland playing a cover drive, then they are an anonymous person, they're not famous, so, you know, it's easy for me to incite criticism, really. So I always find that interesting. And when we do the Vicon stuff, occasionally you see somebody and you go, oh, that's Jimmy Anderson or that's Stuart Broad. But a lot of the time, the actions sort of blend into one, and all of a sudden, you know, you don't know whether it's a Mark Wood, or you don't know whether it's a Graham Swan, or whatever the case may be. It's not so easy to pick out. And then all of a sudden, you're starting to look at detail in a different way, rather than just going, is that good, is that bad? Because you're always thinking, actually, this person's a human being, and they could be one of the best players in their region or at their club or whatever the case may be, with a good performance record behind. That's what we don't see on the screen on Facebook. And obviously the comments are only a snapshot of that one ball at any particular time. But the Vicon experiment would be a really good one for commentators to try and get them to turn into coaches.
Yeah. But then it's not as much fun, is it? So, you know, there's always going to be those comments that say just say something like, oh, no, you're terrible, you know, and then no way to come back to that. So you know, even just a basic thing of coaching, of asking someone a question, you can't really do that very easily if you're commenting on someone anonymously on Facebook. So, but yeah, if people in general could be maybe just a bit kinder. Maybe that's what I would ask people to do.
Well, a couple of people have been, haven't they? So they've gone, you know, it's a good shot. It's a good shot. But if he did this or if he did that. But also what it does, and this is the other interesting thing about comments, because if you stick a comment out there, as well as you commenting on what the strengths or probably the weaknesses of a person on the video screen, you're also giving away your level of competency and understanding and all of that. So then, you know, just be prepared that somebody might go, well, actually, you're talking rubbish, because this is actually what happens. And I always think, if you're going to make a comment about somebody, always realise that there's probably, that even if you think you know everything about it, there's probably out there, somewhere out there in the world, that knows a little bit more about it than you do. So, I think it's always, you know, from my point of view, if somebody has a bit of a dip at an article that I have, then I just let it lie, really, because I've stuck it out there. So, you know, come and get me. You know, I don't mind that. Don't mind that too much. I've got fairly, not, I wouldn't say Vaughan like thick skin, but my skin is definitely thicker than a few years ago. That is for sure.
It's true. You know, life is mostly how you react to what happens to you, and not what actually happens to you. So if you are able to go, do you know what? That's whatever that criticism is. It's not how I react to it is far more important than the criticism itself. So, you know, if you choose to listen to it, if you choose to let it get to your ego or whatever, then, you know, that's the choice that you're making. It's nothing to do with the person who's making that comment. So yeah, that's a great approach. Okay, let's finish up this section by just mentioning a little feature. We talked about Pitch Vision video there earlier, and I wanted to mention the the video features of PitchVision. PitchVision has a product called PV Video, which just takes the video analysis side out of PitchVision and gives you access to the software, to the cameras, and to the ability to instantly review videos of batsmen, of bowlers, as you're going along during sessions, very quickly, very easily, without having to do much apart from plug in the camera, set it up, and get people batting and bowling. So if you are looking for a way to get into PitchVision and you're thinking maybe you don't want to go out and plug for a full system, then have a look at PV Video. You can find out more details by going to pitchvision.com, and you can boost your video analysis work very quickly and easily. And now it's time for us to answer a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, or maybe readers over at the pitchvision.com website. And how this works is we have people send in their questions, we answer their questions, and then we choose the best question of the week that wins a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the first person who's done that this week is Nickel. And actually, this has come off the back of a Facebook Live event that I did in the week. And it was all about data in cricket and how, you know, what are the pluses, what are the minuses. So if you're interested in that side of thing, head over to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and you can see that discussion that went on there. But one of the questions that was asked during that, and I thought it's worth being up on the podcast, Gareth, to get your thoughts on it as well, was from Nickel. And Nickel said, how important is it to frequently check and analyse cricket data?
Well, I suppose it's about what you're looking to do with it and what your intentions are for looking at cricket data. So if we go to really basic ways of looking at it, we're either looking at data to inform us about us, or we're looking to data to inform us about the way that the game might be changing, or the game might be going about its business. So, you know, we all know that 2020 cricket has shifted significantly from inception. It probably shifted again around the inception of the IPL, and it continues to evolve. So if you're looking at a format to see where that game is going, or where that game is at any given time, then it's worth doing that, I would say, periodically, rather than looking at that all of the time. Because if you're looking at that too carefully, then you might get caught up in little changes that actually then end up going back to what they were. So you're looking for trends there, really. And it's been interesting to hear some trends this week around the India-England Test Match series. And Trevor Bayliss has been very much on the march about having some intensity in the batting, particularly against spin, which the scoring rates have dropped off considerably since the first Test Match, where England played very well and scored at a really quite a good rate against spinners in that match. And as they've become less effective over the course of a series against spin, their scoring rates have dropped. So it would be fairly good to see the way that England are probably going to look to bat in the next two Test matches is going to be a bit more intentful when they're playing against spin. So that's a trend thing which can inform the way that we go about stuff. Then of course you've got your more individualised things that you can look at maybe on a regular basis. You stats around performance in games. What's your dot ball percentage from game to game? What's your scoring ball percentage from game to game? Because that could give you an indicator of what you do with that practice that comes up next, or with your mindset leading into the next match. So to me, you've got trend stuff, which might be over the course of a series or even over a longer period of time, to look at how the game is being played around the world or in your league or whatever the case may be, at that format that you're playing at. And then you've got your game-to-game stuff, where you're looking to monitor the stats to see how somebody is performing on, you know, from an individual perspective. So we're going out on tour next week to India. We've got a pretty good idea of what we want to do in terms of the formats that we're playing, which is 50 over and 20 over, in terms of our scoring rates, how we're going to go and try and go about it. And then really, with that in mind, that's not going to change over the course. That intention is not going to change over the course of six matches. But what is going to do is our individual performance against some of those indicators will be monitored on a game-to-game basis. And because you're on tour, you have quite a lot of time around each other, and there's opportunity to have those conversations on an individual basis, which can then inform the approach and the mindset going into the next match. So, yeah, team stuff I'd do on a regular basis, and then trend and format stuff I would do periodically.
Is there a risk that someone can get a little bit overwhelmed? Now there's so much data available that someone can get a little bit overwhelmed by it, either by delving into it a bit too much themselves or by feeling like there's so much information that they don't want to engage with any of it and can just switch off it to, I just want to play. I don't want to think about these numbers things. I just want to play.
I think that does happen, and that even happens at the top level, mate, to be honest with you. You know, somebody like a Fred Flintoff wouldn't have wanted too much information, but I could give him information in a very subtle way, normally involving a bit of humour or whatever, or just pumping his tyres up a bit. So it comes down to the skill. I mean, the numbers aren't going to change. They're going to be available, they're going to be there, but the skill of how you, either as an individual player, look to interpret that information, and when you drop that into you, and also from a coaching point of view, getting to know your player. I mean, we talk about it, we get criticised about it, but if I approach Kevin Peterson in the same way as I approach Andrew Flintoff around statistics, then I would get two completely different results, and you cannot get away from that. So the numbers are going to be the same. They're both going to have a scoring ball percentage. The numbers are going to be the same. They're both going to have a batting average and all of that malarkey, but how I deliver that into each of those is going to be very, very different. Now, for most of us, we haven't got coaches or analysts to do that, so therefore it's down to us as players to know what we want to take out of it and take that information, use it effectively in the ways that we're best going to utilize it and turn that into a performance. For some people, they get caught up in the numbers, and if that's the case, then get away from the numbers, maybe become a bit more subjective, maybe go, you know, to two of your mates, go, how do you think I played today against the off spinner? If you were to rate my intensity out of 5, what would you give me? Then that's more of a subjective view, which you might want to take on board. Instead of getting wrapped up in numbers, you might want to take that subjective view from your mates, and that could then kickstart you to look at changing your practice or building something into your practice that's going to take you forward.
And seeing it as a tool, you know, again, it's one of those hot buttons, isn't it, really, where, you know, people look to the top level and there are criticisms of statistics. Oh, it's too many statistics. It stops you playing your natural game. You know, those kind of, as you said before, those commentary things that people are talking about put people off, I think, sometimes. And if you can look at it as a tool that you have, that you use effectively, and then you put it back in the toolbox once you finished with it, then it's just the same as any other tool. You know, it becomes a hammer, it becomes a screwdriver. It's not some philosophical thing that is going to restrict you in some way. It's just something that you use as effectively as you can use it when you need to, and then you put it away again when you don't need it, so you don't get too overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, definitely. It's like everything else, isn't it? It's like a coach's view. I mean, effectively, it's a similar thing to a coach's view. You hear a view, you might not agree with it, you put it away. You look at some statistics, you can't argue with them because they are there, but you might choose not to let that become too much of your focus. And we talk about self-awareness, don't we, as players? If you are, the more self-aware you are, the more you can utilise all of this information and tools that are around you and resources around you. And that's what the best players, you know, ultimately do. I've had guys who aren't even fussed about stats. You know, they say, oh, I'm not fussed about stats, they steer clear of them, but actually at the end of their career their stats are bloody good. That's why they stayed in that environment, but they learnt not to take too much focus during their time in that team, because if they did, then that might have had a negative effect on their performance. So whilst their stats ended up being 50 plus in Test cricket, they weren't that interested in them. They were more interested in, you know, how am I moving, how am I batting, you know, what am I looking, what pressure am I looking to put on the bowlers, as opposed to looking at it from a statistical point of view. And again, you know, it comes down to individuals, and I know that people get a bit hacked off at hearing about it, but the bottom line is cricket is played by human beings, and the better you get to know those human beings generally, the better you get to perform as a group of players.
Yeah, stats don't tell you the stories either. You know, the scoring 100 runs in a dead game is completely different to scoring 40 runs and winning a match. You know, it's stats don't give you everything. So, you know, it's definitely a tool in the toolbox rather than something to use as the be-all and end-all. Next question is from Samath, and Samath says, I can play a good cover drive against throws, but I'm not able to get the same weight transfer at high-pace bowling. What can I do? And he actually sent a video, Gareth. I know you haven't seen it because I couldn't find a way to send it from the Facebook message that he sent it in across to you. So, but yeah, I tell you what, his cover drive looks great when someone's underarming at him. I can tell you that. but he's not happy about it when he goes up against the quicker stuff. So what can we do for him?
Well, it's trying to get the root cause of why that's happening. Now, the great thing about being able to isolate your drive and get that right is you know it's coming, don't you? So whether you're doing bubble feeds or whether you're doing throwdowns, you pretty much know that that's what you're focusing on. You're grooving at that point. And the same can be said for bowling machines when you're in that grooving mode. So what you're doing basically is grooving on a closed and blocked drill where you're repeating. And then when you come up against fast bowling, obviously you've got completely randomised approach of a bowler of where he's going to bowl it. You know, you don't know where that ball's going to be. So what you're lacking here is decision making. And so what I would say, if your cover drive looks good in isolation, then if we build some decision making elements into your practice, you'll get that connection between doing some static drills and some block drills up into being in that totally open environment of the ball coming out of the bowler's hand, you reacting to the stimulus of a ball and to the stimulus of a bowling action that you're facing, and moving into an appropriate place and executing a shot. So you're almost going from first gear to sixth gear without actually transitioning through the middle bits in your approach at the moment. So how do you do that with throwdowns? So if we go to throwdowns, you might groove 25 cover drives or 25 drives from somebody throwing, and then you ask them to change the length. So say, actually, I want to have 5 drives in this next 20 balls. My effectiveness is going to be geared by my decision making of when to play that cover drive against the ball being released out of hand. So the person mixes up their throws over the course of the next 20 balls, and obviously a perfect round from a cover drive perspective will be every time the ball goes into the spot that you should be hitting your cover drive, is that you identify the cues and you hit everyone perfectly. But that's one of the ways that you can introduce some randomness to your blocked practice and close the gap. And then obviously the next phase would be, you know, can you get the person to run up with a side arm or run up and bowl at you? So again, you're making the distance realistic, you're building in all of your visual cues of the ball out of the hand, and even the movement of a body which gives of the bowler's body that gives a bit of a cue to you about where the ball's going to be coming out. I'd build it up like that. So basically, you take your block practice that you've got at the moment, introduce some randomness gradually, and then you'll be able to pick that ball out of the hand or pick the motion of the body when you're facing fast bowlers and start getting that perfect cover drive that you've got in your locker being applied into the right space and the right time.
The other thing I would add to that is to ask what counts as successful when you're trying this. So if you know that you can, every time you can do a good cover drive against an underarm feed or whatever that feed is, and you feel like that's success to me, and then you go into the nets, but then you don't do it very well against the half volleys that you get, but you do it sometimes. Sometimes you get it right, sometimes you don't. It's not consistent. Then that is still a level of success that you can look to build on. So if you're striving for ultimate perfection immediately, then you're going to be disappointed. And it may be that you end up going, well, I'm obviously just not ever going to be able to do this because, look, I can't do it perfectly every time. But actually, if you can do it, even if you can do it 1 in 100, that's still a start, you know. So asking yourself, what is success? What am I driving towards? Where am I at the moment? And how am I going to get from there, from that start point to that end point? That's an important question as well, because that comes down to your mindset and the way that you're going about your work. Approaching it with the right mindset and the right goals, that's going to let you work harder for longer and get to that, closer to that consistency that you're striving for, rather than hoping that you're going to be perfect, and as soon as you're not perfect, being more likely to give up because you're not achieving perfection quickly enough. And you see that a lot, don't you? You see guys going, well, I'm just not good enough. I'm just not going to do that. That is very rarely true. You might not be good enough at the moment, but you can get there if you strive towards it with the right plan in mind.
No, that's true. And you hear it a lot, don't you? Well, I can't do that. And I always say to the kids here, well, yeah, you can't do that yet, but that's because I haven't shown you and we haven't worked through the process, which will enable you to get there. Because, you know, that perfect cover drive when you're facing a 90-mile-an-hour bowler, even if you can hit 20 consecutive bobble feeds really well, it's quite a long way away, isn't it, for some people? And it's all about building up that visual cue recognition and also the effective movement pattern to be able to execute that randomly. And you know, having some perspective about what progress looks like is crucial within that, because you wouldn't expect a newcomer to the game to be able to hit a Stuart Broad fuller ball through cover after 5 minutes of starting to work out how to hold a bat, would you? You have to build that up gradually, and your expectations need to be realistic. And again, it goes back to that time, that goal setting that we talk about, those smarter goal sets. It all works into that. But to me, building in randomness gradually, as you're learning a skill, is going to be absolutely essential on your journey to be able to do that out in the middle against a bowler, which is ultimately what we practice for, isn't it?
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. We are going to head off in a moment, but before we go, as I mentioned before, we need to decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Gareth, we had two questions on offer this week. Nicol's question about checking and analysing data, and Samar's question about his cover drive. Which one did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go for the cover drive question, because I thought it was a really good one, and we talked about the processes of you know, block practice and how important that can be to learn the mechanics of a shot, but also picking up how that's actually going to translate into a game of cricket and what the process is to get there. So I'm going to go for that one.
Fantastic. Well done, Samar. Don't give up on it. Keep going and use those tips to help you, and also the course to help you. Now, Gareth, if someone else was listening to the show and wanted to get their question answered and also win the prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. Social media is also available. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. Please feel free to leave as many comments as you want, but if you can save the worst ones for somewhere else, that would be great. And you can also get us on Twitter @pitchvisionacad, and you can also find us on the Pitch Vision community over at pitchvision.com. You can get an account there and start joining in and get your personalized news feed and all the rest of it. It's all very exciting over there, so make sure you join in with that. If you want to listen to this show every week, you can do so by subscribing. It's free. It comes out every Friday, and you can search for us in any podcast app. Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us in there. Tap the subscribe button, and you can also find us on pitchvision.com. The show is available on there. If you go to pitchvision.com, click on the podcast link, then you will find us with all the show notes. You can download the show, you can stream it online, you can go right back to episode one. I wouldn't recommend it, it's not the best, but you know, a few hundred shows later we're getting the hang of it, so you know, feel free to go back through the archives if you want to do that and find out more about this great game. And that's all for this week. I hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.
And no lavers, we lost him.